Welcome to the North-South Connection Podcast Network. I am JT, and this is episode 38 of Wrestling Warzone, a Monday Night Wars podcast retrospective series. Joining me, as always, is my partner on the show, Chad Campbell. Chad, how are you?
Doing good. Let me turn down my Fox News real quick.
And get that tuned off.
Yeah.
Look, I'm not spending another podcast getting into this. I should say my partner on this feed as well, Chad, not just on the show. So,
yeah,
my partner in crime.
Not guilty.
All right. So last week, what did we do? We did a Nitro and a Raw from 226. Kind of a shaky week. One of our shakiest in a while as far as quality of episode. We weren't huge fans of those two.
No. That was, I think we decided either one of our, definitely one of our worst collective weeks quality-wise. So now Raw gets the spotlight. For the Civil War movie that's on TNT.
It's so weird to think of a time where, like, that shit would preempt wrestling. Because wrestling gets so big in, like, the late 90s. And even now, like, Raw doesn't get preempted on USA. Even if you say the numbers are down and this and that. But they have so much clout and power that, like, we're never going to see this kind of thing again, really. So it's just crazy to think in the mid-90s they were still getting bumped for shit like Civil War retrospective movies.
Well, even like, you know, like in 98, 99, they got bumped for the dog show. It was like... who was running USA that was like so in love with the Westminster? I mean, you know, I love my dog, but come on,
that bitch Bonnie Hammer.
It was the Bonnie Hammer.
I don't know if she was still there. She was there at that point, but I mean, that's one of the reasons they left for TNN because they they would still preempt them. So yeah, I guess even in 2000 they must have gotten preempted. I would think.
I mean, the U.S. Open, I can kind of see it's like, okay, this is a once a year sporting event, but.
Yeah,
always thought it was really lame. Westminster,
I don't know. Someone was super nostalgic for it, I guess, and it must have been like programming for them in the early days or something. They were nostalgic for it.
Yeah, well, I don't think we'll see this for WCW anymore because even like when they get to the Robin Hood thing in January,
that
happens after. Well, you know,
we get the whole NBA playoffs.
Oh yeah, I forgot about that. But I mean, I can see that.
Well, they don't get preempted though. They usually just go to 7 and it's an hour.
You know, yeah, seven, it's like eight. An hour. Yeah, real quickie. Yeah.
So there's a bunch
and
of
the movies. Robin Hood thing, we'll get to that, but that's kind of a, they did something special for that, but it wasn't a clear preemptive.
Right. No, definitely not. Yeah, no, this is a pretty rare occasion here. I gotta think, maybe the dog show also had, I wonder if it just had like better sponsors, you know, like.
Maybe, but it's weird because, I mean, you know, it doesn't, I mean, it mattered a little bit for WWF programming, wrestling programming in the 90s, but I mean, February is a sweeps week, so it's like right in the middle of that, right in the middle of the WrestleMania build, and it was like, oh, now they have to move to Thursday or Saturday or whatever, so it's just kind of strange. So yeah, Raw has the night all to themselves. We get the table set up for the night with clips of the matches that are coming up. Mm-hmm. So no
Taker Diesel.
Yeah, no Taker Diesel here, but you know, no they weren't going to try to trick us that this was live as we actually see the matches that are happening. And our first match to kick us off right away looks pretty tasty on paper.
It's Shawn Michaels. There were a couple big teases in that open, by the way.
Now, what happened here?
A couple big teases. So Vince not only sets up the matches, but he says, we'll find out the fate of the Ultimate Warrior tonight.
Okay.
We'll get Bret and Shawn in action. He mentioned the matches. But then he also says, we're not going to believe this, the obnoxious, sexist, and racist remarks from Billionaire Ted tonight on Raw.
Giving it the hard sell.
That's it. So. Big part of the episode. That doesn't,
what is it? Call your friend, call your neighbor. They used to say so. A big push. So our first match is Shawn Michaels versus the 1-2-3 Kid. How many have they had? Many singles matches interactions. I'll look at that while we're talking.
I
don't recall much interaction.
Late 93 when they were doing the Razor, Shawn and the Kid was backing up Razor.
Yeah.
Because I think they have, I think they're fighting on that Raw when Shawn gives Razor the Razor's Edge in the aisle. I think that's a Shawn Kid match in December, I want to say, of 93.
Yeah, it looks like we had one singles match on Raw November 29th of 93.
Yep, that's, so, the one. That's the one where he raises Edge's razor.
And that's all I'm seeing. Yeah. So, yeah. Right. Well, I mean, they had some tag stuff, but as far as singles matches, this is it. You know, had the big Action Zone tag. But yeah, so that's kind of cool. Mm-hmm. This is a rare click-on-click match that you hadn't seen too often. Kid tries to attack right away. He gets backdrop as Sean dances and takes off the rest of his clothes. Vince just losing his mind, as we talked about. I mean, Vince was very determined to put this guy over. And it's really to the point of obnoxiousness. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, for what you say about, like, Roman Reigns and the big dog and all this, Vince is pretty bad, just completely oogling over Sean as he does throughout these shows. Sean makes fun of Kid's karate pose, so does some more comedy like we talked about before, where Sean, every match in the first half of these matches, Sean does some comedy, either with Cornette, or he has to be Mr. Funny, so a little annoying there too.
That's another Sean trope. I mean, you can see maybe where some of the backlash comes in this year later on.
Yeah,
Vince with the overhype, and then Sean is getting a little formulaic with some of that stuff, and it mainly centers a Cornette, but guess what? The Cornette stuff is not going away in 96 for Sean. So
it's going to be around for a while. And then Vince always just like justifies it. Like once he, I mean, he's making fun of this guy, and Vince is just like, hey, that's just what Sean does. Does that even mean? He's an asshole?
Yeah.
It's like, okay, great. I did think we got a nice flurry from Kid at the beginning. He gets a spinning back kick. Jerry is, of course, cheering heavily for the Kid in this match. And then we got a cool pin attempt by Sean. He gets a couple arm drags and a power slam. Sean clotheslines Kid over the top rope and then skins the cat back inside the ring. We get Sean backstage where Brett is backstage, and he's saying that a lot of things Sean is getting away with in this match, he won't be able to with him. Brett has his shades on, is kind of acting real cool in this interview segment. You know, his demeanor is they're definitely trying to contrast the personalities here, where Brett's very stoic and composed and cool, and Sean's flamboyant and, you know, just puts everything out there. So I think they did a good job with that.
And Vince even says, oh, Sean may not try the same stuff with you. And Brett disagrees. Right. You know, he thinks Sean can't help himself and he'll do the same thing.
Sean's a dumbass and will try to show off. Yeah.
Also, friggin' DiBiase still in the corner of the kid. I mean, this all feels so stale.
I don't know if I had any notes for DiBiase, which shows how his he does get a few cheap shots in pretty quick, but doesn't do a whole lot here. Power slam by Sean for a two count, and then he locks on a headlock, but Kid's able to catch him with another kick and then a drop kick, which sends Sean to the outside. Brett is still on commentary chiming in. He says that the match at Mania will come down to who can punish the other the most. Lawler says that Brett is going to take off his boot and put his foot in Sean's mouth. So some continuity from King of the Ring 95 there. We get a crossbody from the 1-2-3 Kid, and he slams Sean's head on the mat outside. This is where DiBiase got his cheap shots in. Mm-hmm. Brett called that disgraceful.
That's a disgrace.
Brett also says they are friends, but fighting is part of the job. So definitely babyface versus babyface.
Yeah, he doesn't want Sean to get hurt or anything like that before they fight. Disgraceful is such a Brett word, too.
Disgraceful.
Because it's such a disappointed dad word. Like this.
He did. He sounded so indignant where he says that. He was like, oh, that's disgraceful. I like how King thought he was lying when he said him and Sean were friends, which is, you know, pretty funny in what was going on in real life backstage. Then we go to a commercial break. Back from the break, Kid has the attack and is focusing on Sean's head. Sean gets a clothesline. Both are out. Kid gets up, but Sean does his nip up to a nice pop. He hits his moonsault, punches down on the Kid, flying forearm. And then he hits the elbow from the top. He warms up for the sweet chin music, but the 1-2-3 kid hangs onto the ropes and then gets in the ring and goes on the attack first, which I thought was pretty cool.
Yeah.
I didn't expect that. I thought the match was over for sure, but they gave us a nice tease there. But then Kid kind of goes up top, misses a leg drop, and then Sean is able to hit the sweet chin music and get the pinfall. So I thought this was a very good showcase match, and to me it almost felt like a Saturday night main event mm-hmm. style match. Very action-packed, got the point across. I thought Sean hit his highs. Kid, you know, this is kind of his level on the card for right now, even not leaving the company. I mean, I think this is kind of where he's going to plateau right now.
Yeah.
So overall, I thought a good match. I went 3.25.
Yep. I went 3. It was a very good opener. I like that we're getting the Sean and Brett working tonight to, you know, kind of like their final tune-ups for Mania a couple weeks out and showcasing them both. And they do a good story with Kid focusing on the head, too. And they're like King notes that he's trying to take advantage of that concussion. So they're still playing up that storyline that Sean maybe isn't 100% since Syracuse. And no, I mean, Kid hangs in the whole way, and Sean puts him over. He works for him, sells for him. And I like that finishing sequence. It was tight. Kid took everything perfectly. And then I liked the tease with that missed super kick and then the flurry instead of him just coming back and eating another one. We get a little tease there. But that was definitely well done. Sean then dances with a child to celebrate the win. So this was fun. It was well worked, focused. You know, get the comedy, the heat segment, and Sean's comeback. I mean, all of it was good. And Sean looks locked for Mania. I mean, he's in great shape. He's shredded right now. And this is definitely a good use for Kid. I mean, part of me thinks, too, like, if he was going to stick around, or if he is, get him away from DiBiase and just turn him back face.
Yeah.
And use him as a, in the same level of role, but just let him fight the heels instead. Like, as a upper mid-card, kind of up and gatekeeper kind of guy.
Yeah, I mean, I think, DiBiase is just a non-starter right now. Like, he is bad news if you're
anchor.
Is associated an anchor? With him. Yeah, he's an anchor. That's a good word for it. He is weighing him down. And, I mean, yeah, Kid, now that the Razor stuff is done, there's not really a feud for him to enter into. So they kind of have him in this lame duck situation until he's gone. Well, we'll see how many matches of him we have left. We probably don't have too many, I can't imagine. So,
yeah, he's around for a bit. He's actually around till
May,
June. Yeah.
Oh, June-ish, yeah. Okay.
Whenever the current call and all that happens.
Yeah, so we'll see a smattering of Kid stuff.
Yeah, he's in there still, yep.
Then we get 24 Karat Pictures Presents, Shattered Dreams Production, a film by Marlena, Goldust, and Piper's Pit. The scroll at the bottom says this was edited for television. we have Goldust wearing a kilt, and he's on the set of Piper's Pit.
And it's like it's got this grainy film mm-hmm. feel to it, which is awesome. Yes. Like, that was really, really well done.
Very kind of old school mm-hmm. Hollywood film. Yeah, very snuff filmy, too. It's well done. Goldust says Piper was always big and at one time huge. Some of Goldust's fantasies was from the pit, and he hung on every word.
And he's putting such emphasis on these words, like mm-hmm. huge and big and hung.
Huge. You know,
he's like, really? He hung on every word that spilled from his luscious lips.
The Intercontinental belt is gold now, by the way, so that's happened. Goldust says we can't forget about the skirt. And that Piper may one day go down as an all-time Hollywood great, but not the greatest, because that title belongs to Goldust.
And there's a couple of the lines that pop here. He sunk deep into a sea of ecstasy when he exploded the coconut on Jimmy Snuka. Exploded with pleasure like a rock-hard mountain of lust. He said he spent many hours alone contemplating Piper's skirt, mm-hmm. But Hollywood's Goldust set. He said he saw some of his films, and he got a rise out of They Live. And then, yeah, he says Piper may go down as one of the greats, but not the greatest, because that's him, like you said. So Piper's going to sit back, accept his role as president, and being a lowly extra.
Extra, yeah.
If Piper's a good boy, he'll get a treat. And then you want to hit the last part, which is extremely creepy?
Well, he basically has some bagpipes and mm-hmm. blows into them, and then... What did he say? Anything else?
No, just he does the bad pipe blowing extremely like sexualized.
Yeah, well, Did you get Vince's line as soon as this was over with?
I did not note that. What was it?
Vince says, I don't care who it was directed by. That was the worst acting we have ever seen in the WWF.
Okay. I thought it was great. It was super creepy and well-delivered and a good way to push the feud ahead. So
yeah. Yeah.
I mean, Goldust is locked in right now. He's feeling
it. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, this is his... I mean, with the Razor stuff, we'll see how game Piper is. I mean, so far he's done pretty good, but this has been carried by Goldust. And we talked about in the Razor feud, we enjoyed that, but you could tell, like, I mean, and it was what was happening is Razor wasn't completely comfortable with the portrayal of everything, and that kind of caused a little bit of disjointedness in that feud overall. So,
well, and I feel like some of this Piper stuff is forgotten because I feel like everyone remembers the Razor stuff from early on, the heart and the fondling and everything, and they remember the backlot brawl. But I feel like, I think in most people's heads, it was a quicker turn from Razor leaving to the backlot brawl. Like, I think people forget maybe it was like, you know, 4 or 5 weeks of these guys going back.
Yeah,
and forth.
I thought that. I mean, I'm guilty of that where I thought it was a pretty. A direct change from, oh, okay, Razor's going to be probably leaving the company, so let's just, you know, do a hard turn and have him face Piper. But, yeah, I mean, even this is 3 weeks now he's been clamoring for Piper.
Yep.
So.
No, he's doing a really good job. It's It's been a big next step for him.
So we hear that Piper is going to join us from L.A., and he teases the major announcement with the graphic of the Ultimate Warrior.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Mania is sponsored by Tyco RC Max Heat. So,
and it's a memorable graphic because they always show the WrestleMania like Hollywood logo, and then they get the little helicopters flying around.
So maybe the sponsors were better on the Westminster.
I think so. You're probably getting more pedigree, no pun intended there.
Tyco. So we come back and we get the big announcement for the Warrior.
Mm-hmm.
Vince says no one has electrified the crowd like the Warrior. We see clips of him over the years. We get graphics of Mania 6, and Vince calls him the self-professed Hulk Hogan. And then we also see WrestleMania 7 with the Warrior beating Savage. So completely, they definitely made sure to show those two moments with Warrior hanging tall over both Hogan and Savage. The mystique is turned to mystery as the Warrior just vanished in thin air. But Vince says it's now official. WrestleMania will once again be the setting, and the return of the Ultimate Warrior. He goes nuts and gives his Ultimate Warrior send-off. So what do you think about all this?
Yeah, no, it was really good. I mean, at least hyping, it's Vince at his peak. And I think this is, like, an exciting moment. Like, I don't think people or younger fans were probably done with Warrior. I mean, maybe some of the more in-the-know observer-type readers, Smart Mark-type guys. But, like, for me, like, 15, like, this was, like, huge. I was pumped because Warrior always disappeared. So, like Vince says, like, so, you know, mysteriously. And you didn't hear anything from him. He didn't go to WCW. He didn't go to Japan. Like, you didn't see him at PWI. He just vanished in 1992.
All right.
So... you know, we went 3 full years without ever hearing about this guy. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, he's back. And it felt like he had unfinished business. So I think it was worth a shot at signing this guy and bringing him in to see if he could, you know, it's like, whatever, signing a former first-round draft pick that flamed out or something. Like, see if he's got anything left in the tank and see if he can do it. And if he flames out, he flames out. But I think it was worth them. They need a name power. They need a star power as they rebuild this roster. And if they could bring him in as an upper mid card to main event level guy, he's name value. And he's a guy that, even though he's crazy, he hadn't been as overplayed or overextended as like a Hogan, who had been constantly on TV all those years. Like, Warrior's rise and fall was real quick. So I think there was still a lot of gas and mileage in that tank with him. If he can play ball and they could get like another year out of him or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, probably work for shot for sure. So, as we go to break, I enjoyed this. We see Piper on the phone, and then they give the tease of the Hulkster being handcuffed and handcuffing himself like Hogan was last week. So.
Yeah. So good.
Yeah. Now that was pretty funny. So I'll give him that. Then we get a tease for next week. Our big main event match on Raw is going to be Yokozuna and The Undertaker teaming up, which is an interesting tag team given their history. Mm-hmm. And they're going to be facing Owen and the Bulldog. So yeah, that's our big tag match next week.
That's a cool one.
Doc is dancing with the Raw band as getting jiggy. Bradshaw comes out. And we have not seen Bradshaw.
Nope.
So new debut here. Justin Hawk Bradshaw.
Yes.
Versus Haikushi, who's another guy that feels like he's definitely just hanging on for dear life here.
It's a cool match, though. It's like kind of a weird relic match.
Yeah, I said weird filler match. It is. It's kind of one of those, like, you know, randomized matches that would come into WWF No Mercy or whatever. You'd be like, oh, okay, we'll see what happens.
So Bradshaw had debuted on the 127 Superstars against Bob Holly. Mm-hmm. So
it's just crazy to think he was around since like early 96.
Right? And he's on like he's pretty featured. Yeah. Like even in 96 in his first year, like he's on some stuff, like makes a couple pay-per-views later in the year, and he's, you know, here and there. He's got some, I think he's on Raw a decent amount. So that is a guy they consistently push in one way or another for, you know, decades. Really.
Yeah, 13. Yeah. I mean, 13 he's got years or whatever now, but, for yeah. a career, and then now stuff afterwards. So yeah.
So before that, I mean, he obviously played football, and he didn't have too much of a. I guess he wrestled for a little while. He started in 92 in Global, spent time there, then worked. Looks like he was in Mexico and then Germany, and then he was supposed to go to Smoky Mountain, but they closed.
Right.
He spent some time with the NWA, and then comes in here. In very late 95, he signed on and then made that debut on Superstars.
Yeah, I don't think – I can't recall offhand me seeing a match of his before this. So if I have, I don't recall it. So.
Yeah, what was he, like John Hawk, I think he worked as?
Yeah, it was – I mean, and I don't – I mean, obviously I was only a PWI reader at this point as a 10-year-old. But, yeah, I'd never heard of him. And, you know, as I've probably talked about before, 96 WWF, I wasn't exactly locked in on. So my first memory of Bradshaw is kind of like the new Blackjack stuff. So,
I mean, I must have, because I was watching Global pretty regularly.
Yeah.
In like 91, 92, 93 on ESPN. So I must have seen, I don't
caught
remember,
a glimpse.
But yeah, I probably saw him at the time. But his manager, his Uncle Zebekiah, who of course is Dirty Dutch Mantel.
Right.
Well-known worker and all over the place.
Yeah,
Memphis, NWA.
It's an interesting thing where, like, he had Uncle Zebekiah, and they basically did to him like what Sir William was for Lord Stephen Regal. Right. I mean, with Bill Dundee. Like, it was the same thing, and both were Memphis stalwarts, and then, I mean, Dutch had the Smoky Mountain stuff, but... It's just kind of weird that both of those kind of went into their respective roles for each company. So,
and I guess he's not the
managers.
I guess he's not the. It's not his first arrival. He had been there in '95 with
with the Blue Blue Brothers or whatever.
Jacob and Eli.
Yeah. So Piper calls in. He calls Lawler a Rush Limbaugh wannabe, and then asks if Vince can shut him up. All right. So, firing hot.
And we also find out that Sonny is hosting Mania this weekend instead of Todd Pettengill. So
there we go.
I guarantee you I was tuning in.
Tuning in.
100% watching. I think I watched it anyway, but I definitely was. I probably recorded it, honestly. It's probably on tape somewhere in my bin.
Lovely. Bradshaw's pounding away on Haikushi. Piper says he's going to tell us in the next Raw what the match he made for Warrior at WrestleMania is. Haikushi tries a drop kick, but it gets pushed away. To me, this was pretty distracting. Mm-hmm. It was distracting for the match because Piper was firing off a lot of stuff going on.
Makes Ed Wood jokes.
The Warrior. Yeah, he's making his quips and everything. So Piper says there's only one Piper's Pit, and he didn't know Ed Wood was still alive. Piper says he fought the Bazaar before, and he's just playing mind games. But
He brings up Andrew
the
Adonis,
master of mind games,
which I thought was interesting as a comp. Basically, says I feud with Andrew Adonis, and I know this shit's all just mind games and not. Right. You know, real, basically, or projecting.
Yeah.
So it's an interesting that he brought that up. And also, early in the match, Vince name-dropped fucking Stan Hansen, of all people. He hyped the upcoming Texas tour. that they had coming up, and he mentioned Stan Hansen, which I thought was interesting.
Oh, I missed that. Yeah. Good. Yeah, nice shout by Vince. Yeah, I mean, Piper says, like, we'll see Goldust next week. And then we also learned that Raw is live from San Antonio next week, too. And then the King said he sits through Piper's movies four times to get his money's worth, which I thought was a pretty funny line.
I like King. The one good thing with King is, for all his ups and downs as a commentator and in this run with Dodo EF, not, you know, discounting his Memphis stuff and all that, is that he clings to these feuds. I guess it's a good trait. It's like Bobby did too. You know, he him and Piper feud in 94 and they are going to feud for life. You know, like that is it.
Yeah.
Same thing with Brett, other than when Brett goes heel. Like, he always had these guys, that he would get into these just lifelong feuds with and just shit on them, for months and years on commentary.
Yeah. Well, that's, I mean, that seems to be like your heel commentary role in WWF. Cause I mean, you saw that with Jesse too. I mean, like, you know, like WrestleMania 5 when No Holds Barred is announced and Jesse's like, how dare he comes into my territory. It's like,
those were all in Jesse's head though. Like, King actually had televised feuds with these guys, you know, like Brett and King. Like, Jesse just like created, he's like my mother-in-law creating these feuds.
I always love that. The Jesse acts like they're equal in wrestling. It's like, well, now he's invading Hollywood. It's like,
okay. That was just more him being completely delusional than anything else.
While all this crap's going on, Kushi does the handspring elbow, but Bradshaw kind of shrugs that off and hits the big boot. So Kushi's getting squashed here, essentially. He chases Kushi out. Kushi does hit a crossbody, but that King gets no sold, and Bradshaw power slams Kushi into the side of the apron and on the floor. Big boot in the ring, and then the clothesline from Texas, which was called a lariat by Vince.
A hard lariat.
Yeah, so basic squash was pretty good action. Piper, I thought, was good on his phone call. So overall, this was a fine debut for Bradshaw. And after the match, he hogties Hikushi, and then Uncle Zebakaya brands him with the branding iron. Yeah. So
the JB.
There we go. Yeah, I went a star here.
Yeah, I went star and 3/4. Piper really definitely distracted quite a bit, but again, like, it was at least made a count. It was good. Hakushi just is so much better. Like, he just, I wish he was a guy they took off TV for like 3 or 4 months and then brought him back and just did more with him, because they had this kind of hidden gem on the roster that they just weren't using during a time where they needed anything different that they could get. So it sucks. And he could have been good counter programming with some of the guys at WCW is breaking out that we always see, like Guerrero and all these dudes. You know, Hakushi could have been that for them, but at this point he's just jobber of the stars. But we'll see. Bradshaw is potentially, you know, he hits hard, he's a big boy, and has a decent cowboy look, which Vince is obviously usually into. So
yeah, it's and it's right as Michinoku Pro's really heating up in Japan too, so Hikushi's probably like, yeah, just get me out of here, please. Get me back to Michinoku Pro. I did like King said that Hikushi needed more letters on his body after he got branded.
Okay, let me see real quick if... yeah, you know what? This is it for Hikushi for us.
Oh, this is it.
Yeah, because he's on the 3-2 superstars. He loses to Goldust. And he's in the tag tournament. But we don't see that. Yeah, this is it for us. We're not gonna see that.
I knew it had to be pretty close, but yeah. Wow.
Yeah. So he does he go right back to does he go right to Michinoku Pro?
Yeah, he's pretty much in. I mean, I know he's in Michinoku Pro by like the summer, so probably even before then. But yeah,
October '96 actually.
Oh well, these days he's at these days. I'm pretty sure 10/10/96.
Yeah, looks like he goes to New Japan in April.
Oh.
And he's there for a bit. And then he goes to Michinoku Pro, then Frontier, and then...
Yeah, he's all over. He's in all Japan in like 99.
Back to Michinoku Pro.
Yeah. Yeah, he's been all over the place. So, yeah. Interesting career. But
never came back. Yeah, like, they bring back everyone. You would think even for some random one-off thing. But
yeah, I mean, that's one thing. Like, we'll never see him on the show, so...
Right.
Yeah, that is crazy. So he does nothing. He has the Great Muta match at the big Tokyo Dome show, which was a big deal. That's, I think, like second or third from the top. Like, it's up there.
Yep.
Yeah, it's third from the top. I'm looking now. And then so he has nothing until these days which, you know, these days, the 10-10-96 show is the famous Michinoku Pro, Kantai, DX, Big Ten Man. But the actual main event of that show is Jinsei Shizaki versus Hayabusa. So
they team, right? They end up going to ECW.
Yeah, yeah. They're kind of teaming mostly after that. So it's interesting. It's an interesting career, but nice knowing you. It's, I mean, it's probably highlight WWF is concerned is the Bret In Your House One match, I would say, correct?
Yeah, unless you enjoy him learning English from Barry Horowitz.
Well, Barry Horowitz, yeah, which we did not enjoy, as we talked about on the show.
Yeah, no, the Bret match has this peak. He's pushed hard when he comes in late 94, like right through, you know, like the initial push for him. But yeah, once he turns face and gets involved in the Skip and Barry Horowitz shit, it's all downhill for him.
Yeah, that's it. Then we get another Mankind vignette. Mm-hmm. He's standing up now. I thought this was actually the best promo he's done yet of these, and I've enjoyed the other ones, but I thought this was great. He talks about his disfigured frame. He says payback will be dished out. No one will have a nice day. So he's already got that saying.
Yep.
And I thought this was just really focused. It was a little bit shorter than the other ones. And I'm really looking forward to him coming on the scene. And it feels very different. So they're doing a good job with these different characters.
Yeah, they're definitely
Mankind and Goldust, both just great.
And it's funny because they could have been cheesy. Because we saw in 95, they had in 94, they had a lot of cheesy gimmicks. But they've done a good job of making these edgy and hard. I don't know if they're letting the guys run with them themselves more or what's going on. If it's, you know, Jim Ross and Cornette being more focused on the booking, you know, whatever reasoning or was these, Vince Russo, I think was already starting to get some headway in there too. So maybe all that combined was leading toward this, but they are definitely turning it up a little bit. And Mankind also, he says, he could hear his mom making excuses for him, but his doctor saying he's becoming more dangerous and would have to have emotions numbed. So Mankind paid him a visit, and he whimpered and asked him what kind of man could do this. He said only Mankind could be this evil. So basically he said he's going to take his disfigured frame and get payback on the perpetrators. So interesting backstory they've given him that probably not many people remember, like the original story of Mankind.
Right, yeah. I thought it was they're definitely putting him as like a mama's boy and all that. So it's been good, and you really don't know like where Mankind's focus is going to be when he comes in. So I've enjoyed that too, and I think it's something that doesn't kind of logically happen until it happens, you know. So that's good. Now we get our main event, I believe, which is Hunter Hearst.
Well, hang on. First we get Doc Hendricks.
Well, now I got all that.
Okay. Oh, sorry.
With the store.
Yeah, yeah. Sorry, was that after the entrances? Is that why?
Yeah, they were. Okay. We had some Emerald Heart commentary that
She's a side piece of the week. Do you have notes on Emerald Heart? Did you look?
No, I couldn't find her. I actually did some digging, but I couldn't find her. King, of course, says it's Bret Hart's sister. He says, "I know what you're thinking. She is too pretty, right?"
Then he runs it into the ground. He talks about that constantly.
He says they're all hideously ugly except her, and she's been preserved in Canada. And then we are thrown to the store with Christine, and you can go ahead with that.
No, Doc is in the house. He shills the exclusive WrestleMania 12 chair available if you sit in the first five rows at Mania. I think this might have been one of the first ones they did. I don't recall many before this. It's available just this week, though, at the store for $79.95. If you order it now, you'll have it in time to sit and watch WrestleMania in it.
Yes.
And I was just laughing, thinking, like, putting this folding chair in the middle of your living room to watch a three-hour show doesn't seem that comfortable to me.
Yeah, guaranteed to be in your house by Mania.
Yes.
They're really pushing the Mania-specific merch this year. Doing a good job with it. I mean, this is something that Atherton almost got in a fight WrestleMania 35 over this. So it's a prized possession to some.
It's an interesting build for this Mania too, because they really focused on, after 95 being so celebrity heavy, they really made it a point to like focus on this Mania would have no celebrity. I think it's one of the few Manias probably to have like zero celebrity involvement at all.
Yeah.
They went like, they completely course corrected hard the other way. After they kind of got, I don't say skewered a little bit by like the hardcore wrestling fans, but like celebrity mania really was a thing for that one. So I think they wanted to prove they could kind of do without it, which is funny because they loaded up the celebs in fucking Hartford, and then they go to L.A., you know, Hollywood, nobody, and they have, like, nobody there. Which, you know what? I don't know if it was more, did no one want to be associated with it? Like, I would think they could have found someone. Or was it really that they just wanted to focus? They had a pure wrestling main event, and they wanted to focus to be on this new group of talent and these young guys and just focus on the wrestling, which I could see being a very Cornette, Jim Ross thing. And they had their highest power during this time. So,
yeah, that makes sense. But it's interesting. I thought the chair was an interesting shield. Not bad. $80 seems kind of steep, but, you know, to each their own, I guess. So now we get to the match. First time matchup between these two. So we do have that. Mm-hmm. And they actually don't have that many singles matches at all. Like, they won't have another one for almost another year to the day on television.
Yeah.
And that's their only one.
Oh, they don't have one late right before Brett leaves? I thought they did. Maybe not.
No. Okay. I'm showing just 226.97.
I think they were the ones who must be something else. I thought it was Brett and Helmsley when Sean does the Canadian flag in his nose, that whole thing.
Yeah, I don't know who that is, but
okay, we'll get there in a few
Cage,
years.
According to Cage Match, this is it. So
okay, that's like late '97. So
don't quote us. So yeah. Hunter starts out fast. We do learn he's undefeated on Raw, which I didn't fact check that, but you know, that was a nice little nugget to throw in there.
Yeah.
Brett reverses that with a clothesline. He sends Hunter into the turnbuckle. We get a clip of Emerald looking on like always. Brett continues on the attack, and now Sean comes out with a chair and gets a front row seat of the action as we head to break. During the break, we get Todd shilling the live events. So I wrote these down, and I could not believe this loop. So it's Austin, Texas, Beaumont, Texas, Tyler, Texas, and Houston, Texas. That's Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. And then Sunday, they're in Corpus Christi. And then Monday, they're in San Antonio.
Jeez.
So that was...
That is a run.
That is a murderer's row across the state of Texas.
What else was in Tyler, Texas?
No.
I believe, isn't that the... the chicken place that George gets traded to from the Yankees, I believe, was in Tyler, Texas. I forget the name of the chicken
that
place.
Is that.
But the also, your boy is one cage match nothing. Bret Hart versus Triple H on the October 6th, 1997 Raw when Shawn Michaels sticks the Canadian flag.
Is this one of those stupid cage match things?
You
where,
have to look him up as Triple H, probably.
Where they change his name to Triple H. Yeah, that's right. October 6th, Triple H defeats Bret Hart. I hate that. That's one thing I hate about cage matches. Like, you know, just if I'm literally typing
the same
dude's
guy.
Name in there, just give me the same damn thing. Like, figure that out. But yeah, all right, good for you. So, three. So then they only did have three matches.
Yeah, no, it wasn't much.
Singles matches together. So yeah, that's not bad.
Yeah.
So good for you.
Rare matches tonight: Sean and Kidd and Brett and Helmsley. Yeah, that one always stuck in my head because it was right when DX had just kind of gotten going, and like it was a big match for Hunter to get Brett on Raw like that, and Sean was out there.
Yeah, that's very peak DX. So we'll get to that sometime in 2022.
By the time me and Scott finish 1991, we'll be there.
Yeah. Sean's wearing a pretty cool Heartbreak Kid hat. Mm-hmm. And we hear that Brett and Sean are in top form from the superstar line. So if you want to hear all about that, you can call in for that. Brett has his hammerlock applied. He goes the outside to jaw with Sean for a little bit, and that allows Hunter to get a cheap shot in from behind.
And Sean tried to warn him. He gave him the heads up.
Yeah, he does give him the heads up there. That doesn't last very long. Brett regains the advantage. I actually thought Brett kind of dominated a little bit too much of this match in the early going. Kind of throughout. Like, I understand that you're prepping him for Mania, but I didn't think Hunter was kind of the right opponent here. Like, it's a good... I don't know who I'd have put here, though, because they are pretty weak on the heel side. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, maybe even somebody like Bulldog I would have liked better in this spot.
Is it because you don't think he should have lost? Out there. Or...
Yeah, I just thought he was dominated too much. Yeah. Like, I didn't think he looked very competitive.
Honestly, though,
like, I thought Kidd looked more competitive versus Sean.
In a weird way, though, that's kind of been Hunter's thing. Like, I feel like in a lot of these matches, he gets worked over a ton and then ends up stealing it in the end. I feel like we've seen that a couple times.
Wow, what a great heel.
Yeah, it's kind of a weird presentation of him. But yeah, Bulldog might have been okay in here. I mean, I think we're kind of done with Brent and Owen.
Yeah, it's tough. He feels very played with most of the other heels that are coming to mind. So it's,
you could have done Brett and Kidd and done Sean versus Bulldog or something, because that's kind of fresh.
Yeah, I wonder if they already knew, though, that Bulldog was going to be in the title picture.
Oh, after
think
that?
Yeah. I think they thought that long term.
I mean, they could use Ringmaster unless they were, I mean, they didn't seem to be.
Yeah, I mean, I'm actually kind of surprised. I mean, with what was revealed on the Broken Skull sessions of, you know, Brett asking for Austin, I'm kind of surprised they didn't use Ringmaster. I mean, because, you know, if Hunter's undefeated on Raw, you know, they present that over to make Brett look strong. So, I mean, you might as well just burn off Ringmaster losing to. It's just kind of interesting.
Let's just be glad they didn't drag Tatanka back up.
There was a moment where Vince says that Hunter and Sean could be in cahoots together, which was
art
imitating life there. And then we heard a lot about mind games. That's kind of like the word du jour heading into Mania. Vince talks about it with Diesel and Taker's problems.
Yep, Piper Goldust.
Piper, yeah, it's just a lot of mind games here. Hunter does get a high knee, finally goes on the attack for a bit. He beats Brett down the corner as we go to break, but then, like, immediately from break, Hunter's going for a dive, which Brett gets his boot up. I hate that, you know, I mean, what was it? I hate right. the way that looks. Like, what's he going to actually do?
Makes no sense.
Yeah, then we get the five moves of doom. Hunter does break it up for a moment, but he tries a drop kick from the middle rope, and that gets
another
immediately
stupid
caught.
Move, yeah.
Does it.
It's interesting that it does it, because it's almost like a harbinger for what's coming in a few weeks. But
there we go. That is true. I didn't think about that, but it is almost like exactly mimics what happens in the Mania match. But Sharpshooter gets the win. Sean walks to the back and then gives Brett a clap. So I thought this was a decent match. I only went 2.5 for this one.
Yeah, me too. It was paint by numbers, pretty much. You know, TV title defense. Nothing really stood out. Hit all the beats. Hunter, again, he shows flashes, but he's just still struggling to piece it all together. And like you said, he didn't get a ton of offense. I think Brett, this is a match he 100% could have had in a sleep. And it feels like he's been asleep since December, since that Bulldog match. We'll see if he can pick it up for Mania. His promos and stuff have been good, but in the ring, it just feels very like a big malaise for him right now, just in all these matches. Like, just kind of teetering out at 2.5 and doesn't seem like super motivated, which, again, I think he's just burned out at this point. But
yeah, this is a rough Brett stage.
Honestly, it's probably his worst run.
That's what I was about to say. I think this is probably his worst run as a singles competitor in the company. Because, you know, even like late 91 stuff, there was some interesting stuff of like the Mountie matches or whatever. But,
yeah, this is probably his worst stretch. I mean, obviously WCW, you could maybe say some of that's worse.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Even some of that's better than this stretch here. I mean, this from In Your House 5 till Mania is not his best work. It's probably
that's a 4-month chunk. I mean, once you start thinking about 96 as a worldwide year, like in workers, you know, if you want to do like a top 100 worldwide workers, Brett's an interesting case because, I mean, we'll have the Austin match, which I fully expect both of us to really like, and we'll see about the Mania match, but that's one that's presented. But besides that, there's not a lot there. So it's like, does two really great matches carry you onto a list like that, or what? I don't know. I don't know where I stand with that. So.
Yeah, it'll be interesting how it plays out.
Then to close the show, we get Billionaire Ted.
Yes.
Do, you want to take the notes on this. I was over this one. This one may have broke me.
I can. We get a graphic warning that this is satire, not the actual quotes here. I'm sorry. The quotes are actual quotes, but it's satire. Yeah. So everything that's said are actual Ted Turner quotes that we're going
to sarcastic disclaimer to start us off. Yeah.
So we have a random host for TV trivia, and this guy pops up here and there. I don't remember who exactly he is, but we do see him again on like these random skits and stuff. But so Ted is taking on a bimbo named Candy on this trivia show.
Yes.
So the host reads actual Ted Turner quotes, and Ted keeps getting them wrong, and Candy accidentally gets them right. So he's basically who said this, and Ted doesn't realize that they're his. And the real Ted quotes are shaky. I mean, they're clueless, they're racist, they're sexist. And this is getting extremely personal and nasty. I mean, even more than before. Like, this is Vince completely over the edge. The only funny part, and you kind of hinted at it earlier, the host asks Nacho Man who's there where Huckster is, and we get a clip of him cuffed to the top rope. And I helped that lady handcuff me, and now I can't get out. I like that they took the extra detail to explain that he helped her handcuff him, because they could have just said he got cuffed and he couldn't get out, but they clearly call out that he blatantly was shown helping Liz cuff him.
that was my only highlight that was here. Ted is gazing at Candy, basically oogling over her throughout this. Nacho also has a couple of women around him. He gets hit in the head with the mallet, and it makes like the most goofy sound effect, like just corny, like dong, and then he's laid out. And then the last quote we hear from Ted is saying that he's worth a couple million, but feels poor. So
that's awful. Candy wins the show.
Candy won. I did not like this at all.
We need more
besides the Hulkster tied up.
We need more Huckster and Nacho and less of the nasty Turner stuff. Yeah. I mean, that stuff has been consistently pretty good. The Huckster and Nacho, man, like those guys are funny. and Turner, like the guy who's playing Turner's fine, but it's when we go to this level of real nastiness. Like we had the FCC shit, like just, I don't know, all that stuff is just too much. Like, no one cares. That's the problem. Like, Vince is shouting this.
I think nobody cares. That's what, I mean, you can have a Vince, like, if you're a big WWF blowhard, like, you could say around this time, I mean, like, Hulkster and Macho Man did kind of leave us high and dry if you want to, you know, toe the company line with that.
Yeah.
But that's somebody that's in the forefront. Like, we, like, rarely once in a, you know, Haley's Comet seen Ted Turner even on WCW television. It's like,
right. And it was your hero's predatory actions and the stocks. I mean, none of these people give a shit about that. Yeah. That are watching
it's,
this.
It's above the IQ level of a lot of the viewership here.
So just keep it a Huckster and Nacho and Scheme Gene, like whatever. Like, that's where the fans are mad at, like you're saying. You know, like I was mad Savage went there. If you're a homer, like, that's the stuff you're going to get upset about. So focus on that if you really want to rally, you know, your fan base against it. And, we talk a lot about an extreme three-way dance, right? The way they rally the ECW fans against WCW, WWF. Like, do it in a way that they care about the talent and the way they're used, not this weird fucking Wall Street behind-the-scenes bullshit that no one's going to care or know about.
Yeah, I mean, there's a way to do it, and this was not it. Yeah. So this was a mess. And that's our show, so. There we go. Let's go ahead and get into our awards. Your match of the night. I think we both are going to go with Sean versus the Kid, correct?
Yep.
Moment.
I went with the Piper's Pit.
I would agree with that. Yeah, that was probably my moment of the night. Your MVP.
Goldust. I thought he was great in that.
Yeah, I'm on board with that too. I'll go with Goldust as well. Did you have any commentary lines?
If you don't think a concussion is serious business, ask Wayne Gretzky. It's like a rare serious line from King. He said, Emerald Heart is Brett's sister. They're all ugly except her. She was well-preserved up in the cold. The Heart sisters are much prettier than Emerald, says Vince. You're a liar, says King. Maybe my nose is growing a bit, but the Heart sisters do have better personalities. Says Vince. He couldn't warm up to Sean if they were cremated together, King said about Brett. He pulled him down to the depths of Hades, Vince said about Undertaker and Diesel. And he's harder to rid than a 73 Ford Pinto, said King.
Again with the Hades.
Yes.
Vince loves Hades. The Hades line here. Yeah.
Get to Hades. Shots fired at his head, Billionaire Ted. And then debuts Bradshaw.
Okay. What did you give a score for this one?
A little above average. I went 6 out of 10. A couple good matches. We had the Piper's Pit. Nothing really popped big to make it like super memorable. Like if you didn't see this episode, you're probably fine, but you also weren't like bored by it. Like it was a good bounce back from last week.
Yeah, I think the good match to start us off helped a lot. And even, I mean, the main event wasn't great, but it's better than some of the stuff we've seen, you know, like the Yank on Brett cage match or whatever we saw. Like there's been some pretty shaky Raw main events. So I enjoyed this. The rating, they got a, I went 6 out of 10 as well, if I didn't mention that before. So we're the same. The rating was a 3.6.
All right, so they did
good. That was pretty good. They did a 3.1 the week before, and when Raw, when Nitro was unopposed for the Westminster Dog Show, they did a 3.7. So, right in line with that.
Good. All right. So we're closing in on Mania. We got actually still a few weeks away.
Yeah, probably what, 4. Yeah.
We got 2 more weeks till Uncensored, and then another week till Mania. So yeah. three weeks from Mania, 2 from Uncensored.
Three Raws. Yeah.
So in 2 weeks time, we'll be back here on this very feed with the March 11th Nitro and Raw. We'll open with Nitro, and that'll be closing in Uncensored. So a lot's going on there. And I guess obviously no Combo Awards this week. Could have watched Saturday Night Smash. You could have watched Saturday Night, I guess, and compared. But
yeah, that's true.
All right, so we get that coming up here. Lots going on the North South Connection podcast feed network. This past earlier this week, we had a retrospective on Curb Your Enthusiasm season 10. Myself, Matt Souza, John D'Amato, and Don Carrera. That was a lot of fun to do. I think we may have some new Curb related content coming as well in the future. If you missed it last weekend too, we had the return of Jeff Lund's Wrestling. Talked to a lot of coronavirus, and then we dug into Rumble 91. We had a new Extreme Three-Way Dance a week ago. Me, Jenny, and John looking at 3 episodes of ECW TV from November and December 94. And then coming up, Chad, I think we are going to have something special this weekend. Not 100% locked in yet. And then a brand new series from you kicks off on Monday. Do you want to preview that at all?
Yeah, so this was something I've been thinking about, and it makes... seem kind of random, but it's something I've been looking on, and I wanted to look at something that felt kind of recent, vintagey, and I think PTBNXT is actually helping with that, because that's something from like 2014, which is kind of surprising, and that's you know, now recent vintage because it's 6 years ago. I went back a little bit further than that, so I am going to be chronicling 2006 in the world of U.S. wrestling. Mm-hmm. And I know if you're a WWE stalwart, you may be thinking, oh, that's not one of typically kind of seen as one of the worst years in company history. But from an indie standpoint and from a TNA standpoint, and just in the way, kind of the waves of change, I think it's an interesting year. It's a year where PWG, I think, really takes great strides, comes to the forefront. That's the first year they ran the Reseda building. Chikara all of a sudden kind of comes. They were making strides in 2005, but 2006 they continue growing. The Ring of Honor versus CCW feud is really hot, and you have Bryan Danielson's world title run throughout that whole year. So those are two big thread lines throughout the year. And then, you know, I think TNA with 2005, most people say is TNA's best year. Some would say probably best year ever as of current day. And so I wanted to see how 2006 turns out. You know, Sting's coming into the promotion, which was a big get. So it's something I'm interesting to go back and revisit. I'm not too familiar with everything in real time. I just started dating Jennifer, so I was kind of in and out, especially with the WWE and TNA stuff. So you know, a good bit of the TV stuff I'll be watching for the first time, so I'm interested to start chronicling it. And it'll be probably coming out every other Monday.
All right. Looking forward to that. So lots of good content. Spread the word about the North-South Connection wrestling feed. Follow us on Facebook. You can do that at facebook.com/North-South Connection Podcast. You can follow me on Twitter at JT the Pod Guy, or follow Chad at Big Boys Play WCW, and to subscribe on any podcatcher app and rate us and leave feedback. That helps us a lot with getting some recognition. Also, one last thing. On my Twitter, at JTThePodGuy, I'm doing a tournament. I'll be dropping daily for a couple weeks here to determine the best WrestleMania main event of all time. So we had a little play-in matchup earlier this week, and now we've narrowed it down to 32. So we're doing a straight March Madness-style tournament with the top seed facing 32 and onward. So we'll be doing two polls a day. I'll retweet them throughout the day, only on Twitter. Get your vote in, and we'll have a little, you know, we don't have full March Madness going on, but at least a little something tournament-wise to keep us busy. So, all right, Chad, we're out. Everyone take care. Smell the napalm. We'll talk to you in a couple weeks.